I went to the doctor. All he did was suck blood from my neck. Do not go see Dr. Acula.
One trainer put me on the no-carb, the Atkins. They said after a week you won't have any carb cravings. I felt lied to. I had cravings. When you drive by a bakery and you jump out of a moving vehicle, that's a craving. I had hallucinations. I thought Dr. Phil was on my front lawn. John, come out here and exercise. You can't be big if your lifestyle won't allow it.
Wilson, what are you doing?
Hi-ho, Jim. I'm just testing my maracas.
Usually when I have mine tested, the doctor makes me turn my head and cough.
I'm the doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose.
Run for your life.
Oh, help me, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Oh, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
What's wrong with me?
I think you're crazy.
Want a second opinion?
You're all so lazy.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Oh, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Barry Dworkin is back for this Wednesday afternoon. Welcome back.
And you too.
I hope you had a great vacation. Trip of a lifetime.
It was, the national parks were absolutely
You were
amazing.
In Kenya.
In Kenya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yeah. And like I said, the parks are, it's really something to see.
And
really
everybody's back safe and sound and
everybody's
no problems.
Yep.
All the luggage is back and everything else.
So. Long trip, though. I got to tell you. It tires you out.
How long to get there? It was 2 days to get there.
Yeah, you go, you drive to Montreal, then Montreal to Doha, which was a 12.5-hour flight. And then you stay over in Doha. That was 8-hour stay over, so you get a hotel to stay in for a short time.
Right.
And then you travel from Doha to Nairobi, which is another 5.5 hours.
Right. And the same route back?
Yeah, an extra hour on the way back from Doha. It's 13.5 hours. And boy, Doha is hot. You land in there, you're flying over, and it's essentially just a desert. It's around the Persian Gulf, so it's a desert. And there's just the city, but there's no trees. It's just a city sitting in.
City and
with
sand.
These, with these big office towers and then also dilapidated buildings all around the office towers. And you walk out, and it's 40 degrees outside.
Wow.
It's just like
a dry
wall.
Heat, though.
Yeah, right.
I was in the Dominican for a week. We had a great time as well. It wasn't so hot, and we had a day and a half of pretty heavy rain because, of course, of Hurricane Irene, which skirted past the Dominican and slammed right into Lowell Green's condo in the Bahamas. I don't know if it did or not, but the Bahamas was hit pretty tough.
Right.
So we had about a day and a half of rain, and it's humid because it's the tropics, right?
Yeah.
So it was really only about, 30, 31 degrees, but it was not a dry heat.
Yeah,
it was a very, very wet heat.
Warmer for you than it was for me in Kenya, especially when you're in the national parks. You're already at an elevation of about 5,000 feet.
Wow.
So although the land is plateaued and you do have mountains, so the morning you wake up, it's, 14 degrees outside. And by the afternoon, it's about 24, 25, and even though you're only a degree south of the equator. So it's very interesting how the geography and the elevation makes a difference.
One of the things that I want to bring up is just this incredible story out of the United States, out of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
This is a retiree, and I've shown you the x-ray.
Yeah.
The x-ray,
yeah.
I pulled it from the ABC News website, and I'll show the webcam right now, this x-ray. This is an elderly gentleman, as I say, retiree. And he was pruning the bushes and the shrubs and whatever on his property. And he placed him down, but he had a balance issue. He fell over, and these pruning shears went right through his eye. And the x-ray shows that, he basically impaled himself on these pruning shears. And full recovery.
Yeah.
He it missed... Missed everything, really, except the eye.
Yeah.
When you see him, recovered and out of surgery and everything, his eye is bloodshot and everything, and he's got a scar. But he is one lucky retiree.
Yeah, it didn't go into the eye. It sort of hit the roof, the upper part of the orbit or the roof, and then went under the skin along the forehead. He's really a lucky guy in terms of the injury, because that could have been.
Can you imagine the surgeons? I mean, you come into the hospital.
Yeah, and you see that.
What happened to you? Well, I've impaled myself on my pruning shears.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen pictures of X-rays of people with spikes, you know, yeah. metal fences
nails
through their head,
and
nails,
whatnot.
Nail yep. guns, yep. Bullets that have had that for some reason have missed all the vital areas or the track that it took didn't cause much damage. Anatomy is an amazing thing. When you look and see how everything fits together, it follows the anatomy. It's actually really neat yeah. to see.
I have to say, one of the I did get caught up on some reading while I was spending some time mm-hmm. on the beach, and I had always been a big fan of a Ken Follett book called Pillars of the Earth, which
oh,
is based
great, yeah.
in the Middle Ages and in England.
Yep.
And it deals with popes and kings mm-hmm. and bishops and everything else. That book is about, I would have to say, 15, 20 years old now, and yep. I had always wanted to read the sequel, which came out a couple of years ago, called mm-hmm. World Without End.
Right.
And I finally had I had the time because it's about 1,100 pages long. And it, instead of about the construction of a cathedral, is largely based around the construction of a hospital during a time when tens of thousands of Europeans are dying of the plague.
Mm.
And the nun who is running the hospital is running counter to the priests who were in the Middle Ages, 12th century, who
right.
were the doctors at yeah. the time.
Yeah.
And one of the things that she observed about the plague was that people who were in close contact with each other seemed to get to it, that it was contagious.
Right.
Because people never really thought of this before. This is, you know, the Middle Ages, right? And one of the things that she wanted to do when she was constructing this hospital, because a hospital in those days wasn't just where sick people went and sick people went to die, but it was also more or less a hotel for peasants.
Mm-hmm.
If they needed a place to stay, they were homeless, they were landless laborers or whatever, they would take shelter in a hospital. But they were going to the hospital perfectly healthy and catching the plague from unhealthy people. And just the way, you know, some things have advanced, you know, that there was this thought that you would catch the plague if you looked the person in the eye.
Yeah.
Because it seemed to be if you looked them in the eye, you would get sick. So this was one of the, I guess we would look back and call it a superstition now, you know, that you would look back. And it was also counter to the orthodoxy
wisdom,
of the
yeah.
church at the time to wear a mask when you were treating people, because that was considered a heathen practice, something that heathens mm-hmm. would do, or wash your hands. That was considered a heathen practice. This is in a time when people were lucky to take a bath once a year.
Right.
Right. So I found that very interesting, considering also the news this week that Canadian researchers have finally found what they believe to be the original source of the bubonic plague.
Well, so, what's interesting is you mentioned how people thought when they looked at each other, they would get sick.
Yeah.
Our way of thinking hasn't changed that much. When you look at news reports, right, we do this every week, Rob. We talk about stuff in the news and how causality is always mixed up.
Right.
You know, people think that because this was there.
Right. Or because I did this, I got this or
yeah,
what have
and,
you. Because I had a vaccine, because my child had a vaccine, they've developed autism.
Yeah. I mean, there's
right?
these associations that
right.
are made. And so that mode of thinking is still inherent in our society. It's expressed a little differently with the different technologies we have. But really, not much has changed, you know, and so when you and then when you
in
try
our, in,
to
in the way we yeah, rationalize
so just
things,
like she
right.
was trying to convince the priests, you know, to do these new methods,
right.
we can talk till we're blue in the face and give data to support our to support real science behind
yes.
the real causality, and people will still deny it.
Yeah, yeah, because the priests insist. Well, it's church doctrine that if you have health problem X, then you have to be bled. In other words,
yeah.
you know, we cut you and put some leeches on you and whatever, and that should take care of things,
yeah.
right?
When you have certain belief systems, especially with regards to medicine or health, a very charged topic for people, and you have certain belief systems, you will construct your world to only support that view. You have certain selection biases, confirmation biases, and so you will a lot of times reject stuff that doesn't fit into your worldview.
All right. Let's take a phone call. And the phone lines are open, folks, at 521-TALK, star 580, 1-800-580-CFRA. Doreen.
Oh, hello.
Go ahead, Doreen.
On Monday, I came down with a bad back. It's really sore. And the Citizen, there were two full pages full of advertisements for...
Right.
relief for back pain. And I was just wondering what the doctor thought of them. They were both talking about decompression methods. And another one was shockwave therapy.
Right.
One came under health medic on the Maryville Road. So I just wonder what your opinion was of those things.
Well, from my vantage point and having looked at the evidence for this, there isn't much to suggest that this provides tremendous relief. It might help some people, but when you look at any of the published studies, even from chiropractic journals, there really isn't much to support decompression therapy as a long-term solution to the reduction of back pain. You have these full-page ads, but I'm always leery when you have these advertisements in newspapers or on television that promise you a lot and promise to cure a lot of different conditions with the same methodology. It always raises the red flag to really ask, what is it they're trying to do? So, and I do have the references for that. We've talked about this on Sunday House Call a lot too, and I've given the references out. And if people are interested, I can certainly send you the link for you to review yourself and make your own decision. But if it was myself, I wouldn't be using these things. Back pain tends to get better on its own. It's not something.
How did you hurt your back, Doreen?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
I think it might have been through pulling weeds.
Yeah. Okay. And where is the pain?
Something like that.
Where is the pain?
Well, it started a real tension on my back, and now it's worked around to my right hip.
Yeah. And what usually happens when you get back pain is your body compensates because you don't want to move an area of your body that already hurts. So other parts of your body will start to compensate for that so that your walk will change, your gait will change. And so you start putting pressure on areas that were previously well, but now are bearing much more of a load. And so they start to falter as well. And so you sort of get this cascade reaction that happens when you get injured. Similarly, it could be a back, could be a knee, could be a hip. Usually the unaffected hip, knee, or part of the back starts to hurt because you start using that side more. Normally, for back pain, especially if it was, from what you're describing, that mechanism of injury, if you're pulling weeds, it usually implies the muscle and ligaments and tendons in the area were torn and damaged. And they do spasm, and that's what causes a lot of pain. They spasm, they tighten up, your range of motion becomes more restricted, and it does take time to heal. Part of it is also staying as active as possible because being bedridden or not moving around usually results in weaker muscles in your back and tends over the short term to be much more difficult to recover. So usually, you know, a day of rest is one thing, but multiple days not doing anything, not a great thing. Heating pad on your back, stretching your back, using proper sleep techniques, proper pillows under your knees, support for your neck. All these things will help in terms of alleviating a lot of the stresses on the lower back. But what I would recommend is if you are having a lot of the back pain right now, is to see your physician just to have the back looked at first. They may decide to send you to a physiotherapist or someone who can help get a bit more range of motion in your back. But I wouldn't jump right away to decompression therapy or whatever else it was that you saw in the paper as a means of dealing with acute back pain. It's something that happened as a result of an injury. And because of that, it usually will resolve itself. Usually takes sometimes 2 or 3 weeks, but tends to get better over time.
Okay, Doreen.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Good luck. Hope you feel better soon. Every single phone line is available right now, folks, at 521-TALK, *580, or 1-800-580-CFRA. Let's talk about pregnancy and C-sections, okay?
Sure.
News from the Associated Press today. New advice for pregnant women. If you're getting a C-section, special inflating boots strapped on your legs may lower the risk of a blood clot. Hospitals already use these compression devices for other major operations, such as hip replacements. A growing number have begun offering them for at least some of their cesarean deliveries as well. What do you think? Are you aware of this?
Yeah, I mean, after any kind of surgery, right, you're at risk of having clots, especially if you're not moving around very much.
Okay.
So, for example, people that are in hospital routinely get subcutaneous heparin. Now, if they're in bed, they're sick, they have pneumonias, elderly people, you're not moving around a lot, greater risk of having a clot. So you would give subcutaneous heparin for those people to minimize their risk of having those clots. But for women who are They're generally healthy. They're pregnant. They go in. They have their C-section. And then they go home and they're maybe sitting a bit more. You know, they're recovering from the surgery, so you don't move around as much. So what they're recommending are essentially pressure stockings, sort of a pressure type of stocking to keep around the leg, to keep the leg tight, to prevent any, to keep things flowing, preventing buildup of fluid in the leg, to sometimes reduce the risk of clots. Now, that being said, clots are, I believe, the rate for DVTs or deep vein thrombosis, which is a blood clot in the leg, after cesarean section is about 2 per 1,000. I think that's what they were mentioning. So it's still very low. But it's a
It's 1,000 pregnant women a year in the United States, according to this.
And there's lots of deliveries in the year. So the issue then becomes it's a non-invasive, you know, you're not taking any medication. It's a non-invasive way to help reduce the risk. And you wear it for a few weeks afterwards, and then you don't have to wear it anymore.
Okay. We'll stop here, and then we'll get to Frank and Kempfel right after the news at 3:30 here on 580 CFRA. So hang on the line, Frank. Or call back right after the 3:30 news and you'll be up first. Dr. Barry Dworkin is back from his African safari and he's jumping into the jungle of health with you this afternoon here on 580 CFRA.
Out the door, just in time, head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running.
3:39, Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's the Wednesday house call on 580 CFRA. I have to ask you, because you're back, let's face it, from the developing world.
Yes.
In Kenya. Your thoughts on healthcare in Kenya?
It's a complete disaster.
Complete disaster.
Yeah. There's just...
Is there such a thing as universal health care or anything
have
like that?
They have
a
public health system, but doesn't really function that well. There are private hospitals that people will go to, but considering that where we were, especially near the national parks, there are these European companies that have set up either farms or flower growing greenhouses, and they hire the people who are local there, and they set up their small shacks and homes around the company grounds, and these people are paid about $2 a day for 8 hours of work. There's no health coverage. They're given food they're given breakfast, lunch, and supper, but that's pretty much it, and transportation to and from the establishments. But health wise, no, there's very little in terms of any institutionalized or systemic health system that would help these people. And so the average lifespan for Kenyans is 47.
47?
47. 1 in 6, the rate of HIV in Kenya is, I believe, 1 in 6, 1 in 7 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sad, isn't it?
It was difficult to, you know, it's one thing to see it on... You know, you see the images on television,
sure,
or you read about it.
Yeah.
But literally, no matter where you went, the poverty and destitution was everywhere.
Yeah.
There's 40 million people in the country.
Sure. I saw the same thing in the Dominican.
Yeah.
You know, you arrive at the airport, and of course, immediately you're absconded by porters, yeah, who are hoping for a tip, taxi drivers who are, you know, come on here, yeah, da-da-da-da, and you have to drive through the third world.
Yeah.
And then you arrive at a... to anyone else, yeah, would be a very nice resort.
Yeah. And, but, you know, every country has its problems. But, you know, I got to tell you, where we live here in this country, you know, we are literally blessed with this country.
Especially at election time. And on that point,
yes,
tomorrow at the Queensway Carlton Hospital, please join MPP Bob Shirelli, Champaign Lynn CEO Alex Munter, and Chair of the Champaign Lynn Board of Directors, Dr. Wilbert Keon, for an important announcement regarding diagnostic imaging in the Ottawa area.
Mm-hmm.
Bob's got an event every day at a hospital, it seems.
It's interesting how they come out with this just before elections.
Just pure coincidence,
yes,
Barry.
Yeah.
Frank in Kempville.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Frank. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Dr. Dworkin.
Thank you.
Well, but you left us there for a while. How can you do this?
Oh, you're very clever, Frank.
is the backyard problems here. A big problem. We have friends of friends coming in with Hep C, apparently.
Okay.
Now, A, is that contagious by the bathroom? B, by the kitchen? C, by door handles?
No. In fact, for people that have hepatitis C, it's unlikely that you're going to contract hepatitis C from other individuals. It really is transmitted primarily. You see Hep C transmitted either by blood transfusion, as in the past with the Hep C fiasco, or intravenous drug use. There has been some reports of transmission, sexual transmission, but it's still, you know, for somebody, for example, someone who comes into my office with hepatitis C, there's no special precautions that I take with regards to doing physical exam, because you can't get it by touching someone. It's just not that kind of virus.
And you don't throw them out either.
No, I don't throw them out.
Okay, Frank.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Right. I just want to interrupt here because we have a very urgent advisory from the Ottawa Police. The Ottawa Police is currently looking for assistance for the public in locating a missing child, an 11-year-old boy named Max Gospeach, last seen in the 400 block of Earl Grey Drive at 1:25 this afternoon. He is a white boy with a thin build, approximately 4'7" and 90 pounds, short dark brown hair, wearing a dark blue baseball cap with a beige visor, a blue T-shirt, and blue jean shorts, white socks, and sandals. He suffers from attention deficit disorder, attention compulsive disorder, and dyslexia, and is infatuated with elevators and escalators. Anyone with any information, please contact the Ottawa Police at 236-1222, extension 7500, and we'll be repeating that throughout the course of the afternoon. We'll have more during the 4 o'clock newscast. 344 on CFRA with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Down to Cornwall and Glenda. Go ahead, Glenda.
Yes, Dr. Dworkin.
Yes.
I'm just wondering why, with the C. difficile outbreaks that we're having in our hospitals,
right?
Why more research isn't being done into the use of probiotics when people are given antibiotics?
Actually, there are studies that are ongoing looking at the use of probiotics in conjunction with antibiotic use. And you raise a very good point about that. The issue becomes, though, for some people, when they're given certain treatments and very broad-spectrum antibiotics, it really does wipe out a lot of the normal bacteria in the colon. And so the question is, how much can those probiotics in the presence of these antibiotics still circulating around compensate for that? Now, there are certain treatments for C. difficile that we are not using as much as potentially we should because of squeamishness. And we've talked about this before, Rob, about how there are ways to literally transplant bacteria from the colon of one person who's healthy to another by, you know, making sure that you're not going to transmit any infection, but literally putting back the bacteria just as probiotics would. But in this case, it would be more of a massive infusion of normal bacteria back into the colon that would then prevent the C. difficile from growing. And they're called fecal transplants. And I know it sounds pretty gross, but it is the methodology that's used makes sure that you're not putting any waste in someone's colon. You're just simply mining for the bacteria and replacing it. And it is effective in treating C. difficile. But your point is well taken in terms of using probiotics. And they are looking at that. It's just that your populations that you're going to have to study are already very ill. So it's difficult at times to keep only one specific variable or outcome, because you can get issues where people get other illnesses, they're being treated for other conditions. So it's hard to know if your intervention is actually making a difference if you have people with different types of infections or different comorbidities. One person may have chronic lung disease, another one may have diabetes, another one may have kidney disease in the context of having C. difficile. And so your populations aren't the same, so it makes studying the issue much more difficult.
On to Sharon in Ottawa. Is it questions about Parkinson's? Go ahead, Sharon.
Oh, hi, Dr. Dworkin. I'm waiting 4 months to see a neurologist about Parkinson's. I have tremors almost every day in my hands, my legs, my arms. I have strange pins and needles in my legs and my arms.
Right.
And I just wonder what my symptoms could be, if it is could be Parkinson's or what you might think it is.
Well, Parkinson's disease is not just tremors. It's also what you tend to see with people with Parkinson's as it progresses is they have difficulty getting up and standing. It takes them a while to start to walk. And then when they start to walk, they tend to shuffle very quickly.
Oh, that's me.
But it's hard for me to tell you exactly what condition you might have on the basis of tremors, because there are literally dozens of conditions that can cause that, which is, I mean, ideally seeing the neurologist a little bit more quickly would be helpful for you. How much longer do you have to wait?
Till December.
Have you spoken to your family doctor about trying to expedite this?
Yes, and I called the doctor's office and asked to be put on a cancellation list.
The other thing your family doctor could try to do is there are quite a few neurologists in town, and their office can certainly call around to see if there is anybody available sooner, as opposed to waiting for this one particular neurologist. We do that a lot in our office. Just if the wait seems to be too long or the patient is deteriorating, we tend to call around to see if there's any other cancellations in other offices for physicians that we're confident in. It's not as if we call everybody in the book, but there are certain physicians that we tend to consult frequently and sort of call different offices to find out who is available the earliest.
Yes, and it's funny you say about the walking, because all of a sudden one day I couldn't walk. Mm-hmm. And I live in a three-story walk-up, and I have to negotiate 21 stairs up and down. And I've fallen down the stairs twice now and really bruised myself. And I was wearing a winter coat at the time, and it's just lucky I didn't break my hip. And my shoulder was bruised, the color I've never seen before.
Now, do you mind me asking how old you are?
I just turned 63 yesterday.
Okay, because I'm just wondering whether you may still be too young for the geriatric assessment unit, because you can still speak to your physician about this, but there's the Ottawa Hospital offers what's called the geriatric assessment unit, where they come to the home and they help make diagnoses and organize ways for people to maintain their independence at home, make suggestions for treatment, and also can get people booked in to see the neurologists and other specialists a bit more quickly. But I think it's for 65 and over, so I'm not sure if that would be helpful. But I really would speak to your physician about looking for other neurologists if the wait is 4 months. It just, your quality of life is suffering, and it's not going to get any better in 4 months.
No.
So it really, you know, it's one thing when you make a referral to a neurologist, someone's having a condition that, although is troublesome, is not dramatically interfering with their overall activities of daily life and function, but it's another matter altogether when that is happening. And so there are ways to triage that and to let the neurologist know. Usually a personal phone call from the physician to the neurologist sometimes speeds it up too.
Well, I asked him to do that. Yeah. You know, I did ask my doctor to personally call, and he chose not to. And I've been going to him for 37 years.
Wow.
And I'm going to call again, and he's not in tomorrow, but I'll call Friday and ask the receptionist if he can't call himself, because find me somebody, a neurologist who can see me sooner. Because
I don't blame you for wanting to do that. That's, you know, it's winter's coming, and as you said, if you already have the tremors and you've fallen, by December it's going to be ice and snow again.
Yes, and I was seen by the CCAC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and get into a retirement home, but of course, as you know, the wait could be up to 2 years.
Yeah.
But I've also just been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis.
Well, that only complicates things for you.
Yes, and so my doctor was focusing more on that, even though I see a rheumatologist. My GP was more concerned with the rheumatoid arthritis, getting that straightened away. I just started methotrexate.
Right.
So I got a lot happening, but I am going to call him again tomorrow. I'll say Dr. Dworkin said you have to call.
Great. I'm sure they're going to really like that. Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay,
thank
bye.
You, Sharon. And
bye-bye.
That's our time for this week. Goes by fast.
It
welcome back.
Thank
it's
you.
Great to
and
have you
too.
Back. You're back with your program on Sunday?
Yes, I am.
All right. Sunday House Call, Sundays at 4 here on 580 CFRA. And don't forget health headlines, 10 minutes to 7 every morning during Madeley in the morning.